your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Monday afternoon, April 21st, 2025, as we record this new show. Our previous episode that was released yesterday focused on the Fangraphs top 40 White Sox prospects. This episode shifts the focus back to what the White Sox are doing on the field. I apologize in advance. Starting on Monday, early on Patriots Day in Boston, it was a 10:10 a.m. Central Time first pitch, and the White Sox ended up losing to the Red Sox 4-2, so they dropped not only the series, but also the season finale against the Red Sox. The White Sox finished 3-4 against Boston in 2025, which isn't bad. The White Sox are now 5-17. That's not good. We'll recap what happened in Boston, including some concerning injury news, first impressions on rookie catcher Edgar Caro. Then we'll preview the upcoming series in Minneapolis as the White Sox continue their road trip to play the Twins from Tuesday to Thursday. At the end of this show, we'll share what's catching our attention around Major League Baseball. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, Jim and James. Jim, the Red Sox, they got to be feeling better taking 3 out of 4 against the White Sox, and they get revenge for their series loss last weekend as they won on Friday and Saturday. White Sox won on Sunday 8-4, but on Monday, you could tell it was early for both teams as the White Sox end up losing 4-2. But the Red Sox must be feeling a lot better because they were not in a happy mood last weekend.
I would say yes and no when it comes to the Red Sox, just because, you know, they did win 3 out of 4, but they did squander a game late. They almost squandered a Garrett Crochet start late. And I would say the Monday game was more, there were some sloppy moments in it, but that was more representative in terms of Walker Buehler going 7 innings and then the bullpen actually holding it, even though, you know, Aroldis Chapman gave up a homer to Andrew Benintendi. So, you know, when it comes to the Red Sox relievers giving up that much damage to the White Sox offense, that would give me some room for pause. And also the defense is sloppy, but you did see the talent difference wear out. You saw a lot of hard hit balls against the White Sox starters. You saw the White Sox kind of had to scrap for singles mostly until Luis Robert Jr. and Andrew Vaughn got going briefly. But yeah, it's, I didn't come away from this series or the season series thinking the Red Sox were unbeatable. I think they have room for improvement. They have a lot of young players who can, you know, continue to improve and the lineup can start to gel. I mean, like they have age on their side and they have, you know, some new pieces, you know, Alex Bregman being new, Trevor Story being kind of new, given that he's finally healthy and like the being the plan on the left side of the infield, he thought he was going to be all along. So I can see this Red Sox team being better than it showed, but at least for April, you know, some warts in the mix. And, you know, Alex Cora, I think, has some work to do in terms of figuring out his bullpen and also just trying to clean up the mistakes.
Coming after the Boston series, the big story for the White Sox and has been for years is on the injury front. And James, there's two significant injuries right now. The most significant is Martin Perez. So he left his start early against the Red Sox. They had an MRI on his left, on his pitching arm. And earlier today on Monday, they moved Martin Perez over to the 60-day injury list. That's pretty quick. For the White Sox, that's pretty quick. Going from not sure what's going on, hopefully he's okay, MRI, he's going on the injury list. The next day, okay, he's on the 60-day. Like, they should have probably put Rojas at this point on the 60-day, and they haven't. But for Martin Perez, it's been a very quick transition. What are you hearing about Perez's injury? Any significance and any idea on what the White Sox are hoping to do to fill in the gap that he leaves behind in the starting rotation?
They haven't really said much outside the what's already indicated by the move. To be fair, for a starter building up, like if there's a 4-week like no-throw kind of recommended as a result of whatever they find, you would then have to add that span to ramping back up, and you get the 60 days like pretty quickly as far as like what he can project out. But I think, as they've gone through their several Tommy Johns this spring, there's kind of an understanding that when there's injury to the forearm, it's those are basically the muscles that are taking some of the what's boiling over as far as tension and pressure and force from the elbow that's maybe failing or whatever's going on. So it's pretty clear that's usually related, and it has bad things. Martine has gotten Tommy John before, but I want to say it's like over 10 years ago at this point. So obviously nothing you can't rule out. I'm sure most of the fan base has already written it off as that already, but certainly something significant. And yeah, we already know that, running through people who are going to make starts for them this year, you already lost Drew Thorpe, you already lost Moncarella, who they did re-sign to a minor league deal, as they, tried to signal as best they could that they were going to. God, who else? Mason Adams,
Kai Bush.
Kai Bush. This is already thin, which is why, we're seeing that they're, sending Clevinger back to stretch out. And, another reason to maybe pay attention to Tyler Schweitzer, who's getting promoted to the Charlotte rotation after two starts in Birmingham. He was piggybacking Grant Taylor and was their minor league leader in innings last year, which is usually a good marker of barometry or a good barometer of reliability. And mostly I interviewed him last week and was writing about it, so I'm trying to plug it. But you're going to have to dive into their starter depth in a way that may be beyond already what we anticipated, even when we anticipated probably 10 to 15 different guys making starts for this team at some point this season out of the gate.
Yeah, they may hit that number, Jim, by June, with the way that things were going for the White Sox. I'm a bit bizarre, like the whole Mike Clevinger thing. Again, like when he got DFA'd and there was some celebrating going on within the White Sox fan base, finally they're done with Clevinger. I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson last summer. I thought there's no way the White Sox would bring him back. And you kind of mocked us on social media, Jim. You're all going to look dumb when they bring him back. And sure enough, they brought him back. Stretching out Clevinger to be a starter. Twist of fate for some White Sox fans if that actually comes to fruition.
Yeah, he's basically living the Barney Gumble meme of just Mo kicking him out and then him appearing behind Mo in the bar. Like, no matter what happens, he's still there. I think the relief was with the, just the way Clevinger looked as a reliever this time
Not good.
around. Like, they were trying to manufacture this idea that he was going to be a late innings, high leverage guy, and he was the best reliever in the bullpen, and he signed on a minor league deal, but you can basically pencil him in for the eighth inning. And then he comes out, and what's there to really be impressed by? I mean, like it's kind of standard mid-90s with a big breaking ball, but what hitters didn't really seem overwhelmed by it, and then the returns were diminishing as he struggled to get on the just the reliever routine. So it's just a Yeah, it's really hard to trust their judgment on Clevinger's because it keeps getting refuted. Every single year they bring him as a starter, an innings guy. He gets hurt. He throws like what 16 innings or something like that, and then spends the rest of the year in injury list. They bring him in saying he's going to be a reliever. That's where his upside is. That doesn't pan out, and immediately it's basically refuted. So like he heads to the minors now, and just like why? Why? What are you doing? What's the point? It really seems like and there are theories as to why the White Sox are so invested in Clevinger when the other 29 teams are ready to be done with him. But that's it keeps happening, and the way the situation is unfolding in Charlotte, where Schweitzer looks like the most interesting candidate now because Nastrini is still struggling to throw strikes. Jairo Iriarte is continuing to back up in terms of his stuff and his ability to command it. The other candidates like Justin Dunn is probably the most interesting right now, but walking a lot of guys. Same thing with Owen White. So there is an opening. You hope that it's an opening that Schweitzer can seize versus Clevinger being treated as like he's our best option, and then he gets waxed again, and we repeat the cycle all over again.
Yeah, I'm very in favor of somebody else other than Clevinger. I know what Clevinger can do now. Sometimes a dead cat is just a dead cat. So, very concerning news on the starting pitching front. We'll learn as far as what the extent of Martin Perez's injury is going to be. But right now, he has been moved over to the 60-day injury list. So, it is pretty significant. The White Sox are not going to see Martin Perez at the earliest until mid to late June. Moving over to not as significant injury news, James, Chase Mydroth, he is now going on the 10-day injured list for a thumb injury. Bobby Dalbec was added to the White Sox roster in exchange for Chase Mydroth. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I was hearing during the broadcast that Mydroth maybe suffered this injury with Charlotte, James, that it just flared up on him in Boston.
Yeah, he's been wearing the thumb guard since he got like called up. It's been like something that they've worked around. I thought, I want to say he got scratched for an earlier game or something around it. I know he got pulled for dehydration, but yeah, it's more of a nagging thing by description than some particular event that we saw. But thus concerning a little bit, it doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's necessarily prompting some. It's obviously not prompting like the Martin Perez move or anything like that early on. But like, how much are they going to be able to manage something that's kind of nagging and maybe built up while he's swinging? Is that going to require different rest? Is that going to try to give him like a day off before the All-Star break and the day off after to, you know, steal extra time for it to flare down? How is it going to be managed, of course, the rest of the season? We can speculate a lot, but I think it's probably the main question, you know, as he starts getting closer to coming back of, you know, how do they stanch this thing from kind of flaring up again before he has a full offseason arrested.
Any thought on Bobby Dalbec being the one called up to take over the spot for Chase Mydroth, James? Is he, I guess, where is he playing if he does play?
Well, that's the thing. I think probably why, I mean, part of it is me just not being a zealot to a cause. But as far as like him over Tim Elko, I think Dalbec offers like a lot of defensive versatility, which is kind of like the main thing. When I asked about him with scouts, it wasn't like, obviously we were thinking like, can he be fixed offensively? Can he actually make contact? And, you know, the feedback I got is like, he's sneakily like a rosterable player because of how versatile he is, because everyone kind of put him in that, you know, power contact box and, you know, Boston played him at first base. You kind of think he's this one-dimensional slugger, but like, he played a little bit short in AAA last year. Apparently wasn't terrible. So like defensively, I think he's probably smoother to be like, you know, a four corner reserve than, you know, I think Tim Elko is probably like, if you're calling him up because you can commit a sizable chunk of first base DH at bats to him, or otherwise what's the point? Andrew Vaughn homer the other day. So beating those questions back for another 6 weeks. Or so.
6 weeks. Come on. 2 weeks. Okay, so Dalbec's now part of the team. That means with Mydroth on the injured list, we're going to probably see more Jacob Amaya, maybe Brooks Baldwin playing some shortstop. I think we're going to see a lot of Lenin Sosa with Mydroth on the injured list, Jim. And Sosa is batting over 300 in the month of April. So Leninites, stand up, rise. It's a lot of singles, not a lot of extra base hits, but Perez, Mydroth.
Talk about beggars can't be choosers.
Mydroth and Perez, bright spot so far in the early 2025 season, Jim, both on the injured list, and hopefully Mydroth returns sooner than later. But I guess we'll get more clarification if Lenin Sosa is an actual major leaguer, get better insight on what Brooks Baldwin can do in this super utility role. I have a pretty good feeling on what kind of player Jacob Amaya is. But again, in a season searching for answers, it would help if some of these guys could just stay on the field.
Yeah, it really does seem like Amaya is almost striking down anybody who can challenge his time. Like Colson Montgomery is the early favorite in spring training. Oh, you got back spasms. Chase Mydroth comes in, recovers from his spring. Oh, here's a thumb issue. Deal with that. And now
instead
he's in
of the torpedo
situation.
Bat, he just has a voodoo doll.
Yep, pretty much, yeah.
Okay, everyone.
Because, like, you know, it doesn't seem like the White Sox really are all that interested in, like, Brooks Baldwin being the everyday shortstop, and, you know, Dalbec right. can fill in there, and, you know, maybe Lenin Sosa is also, like, your other option for, like, if Will Venable empties his bench again and just needs somebody to stand there, like, those would be guys who could do that. But right now it's Amaya, and it's yeah, he's hitting what he's hitting, and it's not going great. But it's when you're looking for outs, and we did see that with Sean Burke, like a couple of errors, you know, in the first inning, and just, you know, exacerbating the issues he's having. Like, you know, I can understand Will Venable looking at the defense and being like, that's the most important position in the field, so may as well have a guy you trust out there versus you know, maybe somebody you have pegged for more of a utility role. So yeah, pretty ugly in that regard. But I mean, like, it's kind of ugly everywhere. Like, I was looking at Dalbec and he came into the game and played first. I was really hoping he would play the outfield because the White Sox have been averaging a new outfielder every 2 games. They have 11 outfielders, or they would have had 11 outfielders in 22 games. It was 10 through 20. And so I was, come on, play right field, could do a double swap, and then didn't work. But yeah, so instability everywhere. So maybe that's just with Amaya being there, it's a case of, Will Venable knows what he's getting for better or for worse. And maybe with everything else rotating around, like he'll take the stability defensively.
Yeah, Amaya so far this year in 17 games has a 242 OPS. Not on base percentage, a 242 OPS. That's a 128 on base percentage, a 114 slugging percentage.
And the strikeout rate's not bad. Like, that's what's remarkable is, like, the strikeout rate's ordinary. Like, he's not somebody who's just getting overwhelmed, and that's why he's hitting, under 100.
Was gonna bring that up, but
He tweaked
yeah.
it to a, more contact-oriented swing. He felt
Yeah.
the Dodgers had made him more loft-oriented when he does not have the power to really utilize it. Now he's, he said swinging downward, which I know is not a sexy term to say, but take it from Jigamaya's perspective of I don't have power. What am I shooting for? He's trying to be more contact-oriented, but in turn, we're just seeing weak contact.
Yep, 125 BABIP.
Yikes. Yikes. Well, he's going to be playing a lot of shortstop in the upcoming days, especially this road trip, unless Will Venable has a change of heart and starts starting Brooks Baldwin more at shortstop. Again, we're trying to find answers long term for the White Sox, and Martin Perez is one of those guys that doesn't provide a lot of answers long term. But with the way that he started this year, if he had a strong first half, the White Sox could maybe get something interesting for him at the trade deadline. Those chances have weakened quite a bit unless Perez gets back some type of June and has a few good starts before the deadline. The White Sox can move him. But if the news gets worse for Martin Perez, that's maybe another trade asset that Chris Getz loses. And that kind of hurts with the rebuilding phase as well. So that's the big takeaway. Yes, the White Sox lost 3 out of 4 against Boston, but now they're dealing with even more injuries. Try to spin something positive here. Edgar Caro. So Edgar Caro made his professional debut before the White Sox left for Boston. And in Boston, he had a couple of moments, a big moment, down 4-3 with runners on second and third and 2 outs. Edgar Caro came in with a pinch hit single to drive in both runs, and the White Sox were able to run away from the Red Sox to win that game 8-4. Jim, what are your early observations on Edgar Caro?
Good, or encouraging. He looks like himself. He making pretty good swing decisions, got in deep counts and was able to fight pitches off, and live and get the especially with that go ahead hit. He was able to foul off high fastballs, just keep fighting off until a slider dropped down more in the zone. And if you are going from AAA in the majors and you see fewer mistakes and you get one of those mistakes in an important situation, capitalizing on it is what you want to see. So, cross off the list a couple of just I guess BABIP type hits, opposite field and such, but showing a little bit of barrel control to not try to do too much inside outing, using the whole field, not trying to get out over his skis, I think, when it comes to trying to tap into a power, especially like if he's playing in a park like Fenway that has some caverns. It has some short porches, but also some caverns. Like, I don't know if you can go there looking for homers if you're somebody with Caro's profile. So he looked under control. Also cut down a runner at second with a good on target accurate throw, which I think has been part of his profile. It's been improving. He doesn't have a rocket arm, but he's been getting rid of the ball better and the accuracy is good. So seeing that turn into an early caught stealing, I think, and not having other teams run up the tab on him is also encouraging development. So yeah, it was fine. Like, he's not going to be somebody who, we saw like Luis Roberts hit a missile over the monster and turn a game around, and you see like, oh, he's a guy in the middle of the order. I don't think Caro is going to be that, but he's going to be somebody, I think, when he gets his feet under him and makes the adjustments and counters the adjustments made to him, that he should be somebody who is part of a good lineup, keeps things moving, occasionally comes through with double or a homer, and we're seeing at least the building blocks of that. I know there is some frustration with him, sharing time with Matt Theis, but I think just with the weird schedule and every game being less than 24 hours from the one before it, I think probably compromised some catching schedules because everything was kind of like a day game after a night game. So I think the rest of this road trip should be more revealing in terms of how much they want to give him against righties and lefties versus playing to platoon strengths with Theis and Caro's more dangerous swing. So yeah, but I think early on he did about as much as he could think he would.
Yeah, the White Sox are busy. They only have two upcoming off days for April 28th and May 12th. That's it. So lots of back-to-back games for the White Sox in this stretch. James, what are your thoughts about Caro getting a chance to watch him?
Seems like he can hit, which is always a welcome quality. It's like watching a bunch of major leaguers. You knew he didn't have like premium size, especially watching him like in the minors, but now like he just looks kind of like outright small height-wise a little bit, and that kind of keys an approach. It seems like much more line drive oriented. His feel for making contact created a lot of like hard line drives already. It doesn't seem overwhelmed by the stuff level. So not as slow as I feared he might be a little bit in at least in terms of forcing team to make plays. I thought he had a good even in that bat he struck out in earlier Monday. He had a good like two strike checkup, which given that Eric and I had this whole battle or not battle but like talk about like his two strike chase rate or his raw chase rate is like really good, but his two strike chase rate is actually like higher than average. And we were thinking like, oh, when he faces more premium stuff, maybe he's actually all the plate discipline's gonna go away. And while he hasn't taken a walk yet, I don't really that's not the vibe at least he's given off. At least that's like because Jim has talked about watching in person. It's pretty confident takes around the zone that gives you a lot of confidence. This guy knows and will adjust the zone on top of the fact like he's 22. Like he's without like big tools, he's just kind of like performed at levels above his age, like so consistently throughout his career in a way that really only like pretty steady major leaguers tend to do. So even if like we don't see like that big time impact, like I think you're seeing that he's not overwhelmed in a way where he's never really been overwhelmed offensively at any point in his career. I don't think this is like a knock on Caro in any way, but like the game got away Monday from Cannon basically like losing his release point and just missing high and wide like over and over again in that one inning. Edgar Caro catching like I don't know his fourth or fifth game, 22 years old. You wouldn't expect anyone to like have the words to like tamp down that situation at that point. And given how much the emphasis the White Sox put on what value Narvaez had, and why he was like supposed to be competing for a roster spot all the way up till camp, or having Matt Theis and being important to add this other more experienced catcher over Corey Lee in the offseason. Obviously, when you do shift in the rookies, you're probably going to take a little bit of hit on your ability to, especially with a group of kind of these number three, number four, number five level starters who are working to establish themselves, who kind of can lose control of the outing in one inning in that way because they don't have the stuff to get through it. As you migrate in Caro and Kyle Teal, you're going to go through some growing pains as far as being able to keep those outings right in. Maybe you lose a little bit of what you had as far as being able to keep those games in place that you had, but ideally you'll score more or ever to counteract it a little bit. And it seems like Caro can contribute to that early. I at least think end of 2023, talking to like Lorenzo Bundy when he was had Caro and like Birmingham, there's like this guy is like out of gas at the end of his first full season. We are tapering down his catching load. And in 2024, he misses with the back injury. I would factor that in when seeing the White Sox not like, hey, here's prime AJ Pierzynski workloads to Edgar Caro, like right off the bat. I think they probably have some reasoning for that beyond just like, these kids today, they don't want to play all catch all three games of the series. I think they have some specific reason to probably be a bit more cautious, even if I think for our sake, we'd rather just see Caro DH every day that he doesn't do catch as well, rather than, some of the here for a good time, not a long time. Minor league free agent signings that they have for the roster.
Yeah, Nick Maton's time might be
I
coming
wasn't
up
gonna
for the
name
White
names.
Sox.
They're named. They're multiple names. There are lots of names. That was the
All
first name I thought of.
right. So before we move over to the Minnesota series, I have a fun fact in quotes, a bit disturbing. And here's the fun fact. So far, the White Sox are the only team to not have a save. Zero saves for the Chicago White Sox. And we are April 21st. The Minnesota Twins have one save. God, the Twins are 1 for 6 in save opportunities. They're supposed to have a good bullpen. The White Sox are 0 for 2 in save opportunities. No saves. When is that save happening, Jim? When are the White Sox going to hold on and get a save?
I'm trying to even think of like I'm with those two blown saves. I don't think those were ninth inning saves, or at least both of them were. They're probably like the seventh inning blown lead
Well,
variety
Detroit
to where,
definitely was a ninth inning.
there's one. Clevenger's, well, yeah, but in terms of like, I think there was another one where it was just, might have been seventh inning, but yeah, it's
Murphy got a blown
fascinating.
save mid like seventh or eighth inning. I was like,
Yeah. But like, what's fascinating is like that the wins have been blowouts or romps or like scoring 8 or more runs, and that's I think the shocking thing. It doesn't surprise me, having seen last year, having seen a year where Jake Petrichka led the White Sox in saves. Like, we've seen some seasons where save situations just don't happen because of just games getting away, but in terms of being a bad offense but also having the capacity to ruin some pitching staff stay or pitching coaches' days with like how they were able to run up the score. Kind of shocking. So yeah, I think everybody's candidate for your save leader is still in play. Did you have Penn Murphy? Because I think
I did.
I think I was sick for that podcast
Yeah.
recording. But yeah, that was a case of it's like I couldn't think. Well, Steven Wilson might be somebody who gets that save based on, the fact that he looks like he's back to what he was supposed to be all along. Jordan Leisure will probably get a save opportunity and then, have it blow up in his face because he tends to just get Peter principled over and over again in terms of looking really devastating for 3 games in a row. And then, like, he gets that little bit of responsibility, and that's when regression comes in. So, yeah, everybody's choices are still wide open.
Hey, Leisure had a big moment though to get the game into extra innings,
Yeah.
able to get that final strikeout. I think you're right. Leisure is going to get those opportunities. But yeah, it's just something that caught my attention. My exact prediction, Jim, was Penn Murphy leads the White Sox with 6 saves this season. That might be high. I don't know how many saves the White Sox are going to have. Do you have a guess, James? Do you have a wild prediction when the White Sox are going to pick up their first save of the season?
Anytime I predict them to do something well, it winds up being wild. Put myself on the line for them so many times without reason and only been burned. Let's go one of these next 3 games, and
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All
I think
right.
it'll be Cam Boozer. I think he's looked pretty good.
Okay. I
Think
like
his
it.
ELO's up a tick since from last year. He gave up a couple early homers, but I think he's looked better since, and they also used him to close out the game on Sunday, and I have been. He and Clevenger were kind of talked about as like their two most trusted leverage options, and now that one is
Gone.
moved to a different line, I think they would ride with him a little bit.
All right, so James has got Cam Boozer for the first save. Are you piggybacking on James's prediction for save, Jim, or are you going with Leisure?
It's a good one. I think it's going to be lefty righty in terms of who's coming to the plates and who can be subbed out, who are the bench options. So I think it'd be either one, and it's just more determined by whether it's a lefty or righty heavy part of the lineup or part of the bench for the final inning.
All right, so Will Venable not caring about your guys' fantasy baseball teams and needing saves. Don't take a win from the White Sox bullpen right now if you are in need of saves, because the White Sox have none. So it's
You're at
something to
this
pay
point,
attention to.
you got bigger problems than Venable.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. Moving over to the next series for the White Sox, they head from Boston to Minneapolis to take on the Minnesota Twins. The Twins are currently 7-15 this year. They're six games back at Detroit, fourth place in the American League Central. They have lost their last three games. The Twins, better at home than on the road. The Twins are 4-5 this year at Target Field. Not great. Another shocking stat, the Minnesota Twins are 1-9 outside of Chicago on the road this year. They won two games out of three against the White Sox at Wrigley Field. They are 1-9 in all other road games. They've been playing really bad baseball away from Target Field. The season series of Twins are ahead 2-1. Offensively, they are sputtering still, averaging 3.4 runs per game. On the run prevention side, they are allowing 4.3 runs per game, which is not bad. They really need their offense to pick up. There are two guys in particular that are heating up, though, as the White Sox are coming to town. That's a bit concerning from a White Sox perspective. Your pitching probables for this series, Tuesday night, 6:40 p.m. Central Time. It's the dart. Davis Martin against Bailey Ober. Ober struggling to start the year. He's got a 6.16 ERA. Wednesday night, this is going to be a Sox Machine from the 108 watch party on playback.tv/Sox Machine. For the White Sox, it's to be announced. For the Twins, it'll be David Festa. And then Thursday, getaway day. This is a 12:10 p.m. Central Time start. Shane Smith will get the ball for the White Sox against to be determined for the Minnesota Twins. And those two hitters that are heating up in the last five games, Byron Buxton and Carlos Correa, both of them have an OPS over 1,000 in their last five games. And we know how much Byron Buxton loves to hit White Sox pitching. But I want to draw attention to Wednesday because that was supposed to be Martin Perez's start. He's obviously unavailable. So, James, any guess on who could start on Wednesday? Are we looking at Jared Schuster?
I mean, Schuster had been starting in Charlotte, had he?
No.
So I mean, Schuster made several starts last year where he just like, you know what? Now I'm thinking about it. Sure. Let's go Jared Schuster as an opener for Mike Vassell, as how they patch that together. That seems like something they would do.
All right. You like that idea, Jim? Or is there somebody else that you like to see get a start?
It would work against the Twins because like Larnach and you'd have to sit or move down Larnach or who's their other lefty? Wallner. They're two big galoots that they always sit whenever there's a lefty up. So I think the Twins are a more platoonable matchup to do it with.
Okay. I like that reasoning.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's going to be like an opener or whether it's going to be like Jared Schuster, go as long as you can, or like we're hoping for two. If you can go three, terrific. But we'll
is there a pitch count attached to that, Jim? Where you just like, hey, if you still look good, let's go inning by inning.
I think he's been throwing like reliably two innings plus with Charlotte. So it's a case of like he could probably go at least 40, 45, just a case of if he gets done early or, you know, like gets a seven pitch inning for his first start, they might think three, you know, go through the lineup one time. You know, so he should be, you know, fairly rested to where, you know, he can be pushed two innings comfortably. But yeah, probably as long as the bullpen doesn't get blown up in the first game to where they might have to consider sending somebody down and bringing up a fresh arm, I imagine they can stitch together five innings between Schuster, Vassell, and then you get into like the, you have Tyler Gilbert's rested. He can go more than one. And then, you know, if it goes the way the White Sox games have been going on the road, they only have to worry about eight innings instead of nine.
That is especially in Minneapolis. For a Twins perspective, are you guys selling the Twins here? Like, what do you need to see in this series for you to buy a little bit more into the Minnesota Twins bouncing back in 2025, James?
Maybe like, I mean, I don't believe in
them. You don't believe in them. Okay. You're out. 22 games like, in, we're out.
I don't want to put everything on a reliever, but certainly like they're not super deep, but they do have like probably more enticing top end pieces. But like Griffin Jacks being like, you know, messed up is obviously like a way for them to like, especially early on, swing a couple wins in the losses in a way that maybe seems a little bit bigger than it is. I think all we've watched Carlos Correa do is like kind of hit hard lineouts against the White Sox, so that he has like a 68 WRC plus is obviously probably going to normalize a little bit. It's in a lot of dudes that you thought were going to take over, you know, like it seemed like they were all well on their way, set up for like a future awesome infield with like Edward Julian and Brooks Lee. And it's been slower to see that kind of really come to form. And there's been a lot of injuries, and I don't think there's a lot of pitching depth behind their starting five, which has already seemed kind of beat up with whatever was going on with Chris Paddock the first time he faced the White Sox, with his velo dropping the 90 by the end of the game. And the way Bailey Obers looked, I don't know. I'm just not bullish on them having the horses, and certainly not committing the resources to upgrading the team mid-year, just in general, but also certainly if they're underperforming as they already have.
How about you, Jim? What do you need to see from the Twins to buy into them?
Nothing they can show against the White Sox. I mean, it's been a case of like they've been fattening up on the White Sox and probably turning into a paper tiger because of just going 12-1 against them and then well under 500 against the rest of the league, winning a series against the White Sox and then having a record worse than the White Sox at some point in April despite winning that series. Like that's the kind of thing where just they can bum slay all they want against the White Sox, but until it shows up against more normal opponents, not even like winning teams, because most teams fatten up against losing teams. It's kind of the nature of the long season. But when it comes to the way the Twins have played over the last 2 months of 2024, and then it does seem like they're ready to turn the page in a lot of things. And until they do, it seems like they're content to beat up on the White Sox and nobody else.
If the White Sox have a road series sweep in them, I hope it's this one. I hope that the White Sox sweep the Twins. It'd be funny. And now I'm expecting the Twins to sweep the White Sox. That's my expectation. But the White Sox would be the team to complete the meltdown in Minneapolis. If the White Sox go into Minneapolis and sweep the Twins, that'd be it. Like, Twins fans are done. The NFL draft is on Thursday. They will just shift focus over to the Timberwolves and the Vikings. Like, they'd be out on the Twins for the rest of the season. I'd be good with that. Let's do it, White Sox. Let's cause that pain for Twins fans. And again, that's Tuesday, Wednesday night. Wednesday night is going to be a Sox machine from the 108 watch party. You can watch the game along with us at watchplayback.tv/Sox machine. Look forward to seeing you guys in the playback room as we watch that game together. And we'll conclude this episode by taking a look around Major League Baseball as we do after the weekend. And Jim, I'll start with you. What is catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
I have a college friend who lives in South Korea now, and we shoot messages back and forth at different hours of the day, different time zones, and so I'll get random updates when I'm not expecting them about the Rockies because that's his team. He's from Denver, and as bad as the White Sox have been this year, I think you're seeing them. We'll see what happens with Martin Perez being out, and we'll see if like the rotation collapses the way it might. But for the time being, like this Red Sox series was a series loss, but it was a respectable one. Like they showed some fight, they showed some competent play. Sometimes they were the more competent team on the field, which is I think what you want to see. And I think you're seeing like maybe one difference of the Will Venable era early is like no ostensible panic or there is an effort of like we got to prove ourselves every day. It's more a case of we know where we are, but we'll also shift around as many options as possible till we find something that's working. The Rockies, on the other hand, have a worse record than and also my friend Matt was saying like I think the Rockies are worse than the White Sox this year, and I was like not sure about that. Maybe. I think it's clearly a clear bottom three, definitely a clear bottom two. The Marlins are feisty early on, but seeing the Rockies, they already had the thing where they got shut out over a weekend against San Diego. So that's one thing that made me go, like they might have what it takes. And then firing their hitting coach and replacing him with Clint Hurdle is like a level of ingenuity the White Sox haven't
Envy.
had. Like they might, this might inspire him. Think like Tony La Russa is still around. We can, he can be our new, maybe he doesn't want to do the travel, but he can be the assistant hitting coach, or he can be co-bench coach for us, because if you're seeing Clint Hurdle come back into play, like, yeah, why not? That I think is a certain je ne sais quoi about just what the Rockies might have to be, because I did predict that the White Sox would be like 40, I forget what it in the win total in the 40s, but not the worst team in baseball, because I thought either the Marlins or Rockies would have what it takes, and right now the Rockies are the ones who are going that extra mile. And it's, yeah, Clint Hurdle back. It's something yeah, if you lack so many interesting coaches in your minor league system, or coaches that you believe in, or messengers that you think that Clint Hurdle's the one that's back, like, oof, not great for leadership.
The Rockies are on pace to win 31 games. They're 4-17. They're a half game behind the White Sox for worst record in Major League Baseball. I don't know how the Rockies win 40 games with the current roster. The Chris Bryant signing not going well. So that's a good one, Jim. Like, if you're a White Sox fan, not the worst. So progressing. Yes. James, how about you? What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
Tristan McKenzie got DFA'd.
Ooh.
Seemed not too far removed from, well, actually seems watching him seems very far removed from when he was seemed like a Cy Young candidate or a trendy pick a couple of years ago. It's back to throwing the ball 93-ish, as much ride as ever, but is absolutely getting hammered and throwing only fastballs and can't throw strikes. So I think it's a name value, especially with the White Sox like starter situation where it is that springs to mind. But there's also like a resonant belief that like if Cleveland is cutting bait on this dude, what do you think you're going to do about it? Mostly, I just bring it up because like it spurs to mind like when there is like a comeback story and he's like back to being good again. Like he says like, and those 20 innings where I had a 12 ERA in Charlotte really was the turnaround point where it's like something's got to change. So that story could be written soon. Who knows? Got Tobias Myers on the right track. So why can't they?
Yeah.
By
Okay.
letting
So
him hit rock bottom is what I mean. But
James is predicting the White Sox are going to sign Tristan McKenzie and send him to Charlotte.
that's. I don't know. I just think that would be funny. I don't know if I
Okay.
predict
We'll have a 16
it.
ERA.
We require a 40-man spot, so that part wouldn't be fun if they claim long way.
That's true. Man, yeah, Tristan McKenzie, pretty big fall. If only he could face Andrew Vaughn in every plate appearance, because he loves pitching against Andrew Vaughn. All right, my one thing around Major League Baseball caught my attention as I was looking at individual leaders as we approach the end of April. And James is probably well aware of this, but Jim, there is one star player in Major League Baseball that their season line so far would trigger you on multiple fronts. And that is none other than Mike Trout. Mike Trout this year is batting 184 with a 289 on base percentage. Neither very good, neither very Trout-like. But he's slugging 513. And what's helping him, he's got 14 hits this year, 8 home runs, Jim, 1 double. So that looks really weird. 16 RBIs. Like just across the board, that is not a very pretty stat line, but Mike Trout is second in the league in home runs right now with 8. But I saw his line. I'm like, this is a line that would trigger Jim. What's going on here? I don't know what to make heads or tails of. Batting average is bad. The on base percentage is awful. My Lord, slugging. It does feel like Trout is all or nothing right now with his swings.
Well, that line, the shape of it, remind me of like Mark McGwire's last season. That's the first thing that jumped out to me. Like, I think I've seen that before. And I looked it up, and it's Mark McGwire last year in St. Louis, or last year as a major leaguer, 2001, 37 years old, 187 batting average, 316 OBP, 492 slugging. So similar, but that was only good for a 105 OPS plus because of just how warped the offensive environment was, whereas like Trout's like comfortably above average with that. But yeah, the thing that was most remarkable about that McGwire year was 29 homers and 4 doubles. So similar ratio, except McGwire was, you say what you will about what he was taking at the time or et cetera, but also like his, he was just his back was messed up, couldn't run. Whereas Trout's still an outfielder, so yeah, he should have at least some accidental doubles in him. And yeah, not happening right now. But yeah, it's certainly we've seen it before. But if it's a case where like if Trout's putting up that now and it lasts for a while, then the end could come quicker than anybody's comfortable with discussing, just because of how fun he's been for most of his career.
All
Yeah, we'll
this
see
like,
it.
oh, we got to keep him healthy. We got to pray for a days of healthy Mike Trout for this Willie Mopena act to go around being treated like this is like appointment viewing. I'm weighing whether to start him over Lane Thomas day to day.
And you
I'm
are,
also,
aren't you? You got to take
I
advantage of
am.
this. Yeah.
I'm also looking at
He's
Frank
gonna get
Thomas.
comfortable.
No, even Frank Thomas had 20 doubles. Actually, 30 doubles in 2007, like his second last season. So, in terms of yeah, when he was like clearly post White Sox ankle held together by Saran wrap, that's where he was like not running at all. Like he was in the put the ball over the fence business, and if he walked or singled, it's just like, yeah, it's gonna need three singles to score me because I'm not. They don't pay me enough to run. That was 39 homers, 11 doubles that year. But then, eventually, got his legs underneath him enough to where he's able to actually put more effort into his gait. But yeah, those are the two ones that come to mind, and both are completely different builds and positions and stages of his career where Trout is not supposed to be right now.
Yeah, we'll see if Trout picks up the doubles, maybe gives James a little bit more confidence to start Trout in his fantasy team lineup over Lane Thomas. How is Lane Thomas even doing to start this year? Why
Not
is this
great.
even a
Just put him in the
debate?
rest of the pitch.
Oh man, but again, that season line caught my attention. Cal Raleigh and Tyler Soderstrom still leading the majors in home runs with 9. So some a couple of surprise leaders in home runs hit so far. The big dumper, Cal Raleigh, carrying my fantasy baseball team. Thank you very much, Cal. I appreciate you.
Thomas was a helpful episode of Other Teams Do It Too because he got hit in the wrist and like missed like 6 games without being put on the IL
Did
day to
this
day.
year?
Oh, yeah, when the White Sox hit with the pitch, he didn't play for like almost a week without an IL move.
Brave, brave Cleveland. That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on all the social media platforms. We are at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at Sox Machine underscore Josh. We're also on Blue Sky, which is simply at SoxMachine.com on Blue Sky. I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. James is JR Fegan.SoxMachine.com on Blue Sky. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, go to SoxMachine.com to sign up to become a subscriber. Monthly plans start at $5. You get an ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. You also get the opportunity to participate in the comments section as well. You can gift articles. You can even gift subscriptions as well. Again, go to SoxMachine.com to sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your uncle all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.